is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Men Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. He's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Got a lot to get to here in this hour. Anthony DeBundo is going to join the program, talk all things World Cup. And then coming up later, we're going to talk with Max Goodman, all things New York City baseball with the Mets and Yankees. And of course, Wes Reynolds, our Wednesdays with Wes, those conversation before the John Deere Classic gets set to begin tomorrow. Appreciate everybody reaching out on social media. The consensus is, Jensen, that I'm cooked for my golf trip. And Jonathan Davis even texted us and said, yeah, you're cooked. You're in trouble. So I got to reevaluate here before my trip here in a couple of weeks. We don't know where the king, LeBron James, will be making his next trip. That's where we begin today's edition of our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Think he's going to hold a made-for-TV special for the decision this time around. 8 years removed now from his Laker career, but removed is the key word, Jensen, because he has informed the team that he will not be back next year in a Laker uniform. Now, again, he told the team, Jensen, that he won't be coming back. You think there might be a different story to that to be told there?
Totally agreed. He was told a year ago that his services were probably not going to be needed any further when Luka took over. The king has abdicated his throne. Not a shock here. However, one of our native sons in this side of the country in Northeast Ohio, not that he'd be coming home again for the final time. Prediction market saying right now, looking at Poly Market, looking at Kalshi, that he has got about a 46% chance to go to Golden State. Cleveland right behind them in that second spot, right around 30%. So we'll see what the sweepstakes are like. He has said through the media and his agent, Rich Paul, he will take as long as needed to get all the offers. Take all your time, play all the golf you want. Nobody cares, LeBron. It's just about the narcissism that continues with one of the greatest to ever do it.
Did win a title in L.A. Of course, you know this. Won that title with Cleveland when he came back there with Kyrie. Did win a title in Miami and a couple there. So he has won at pretty much every stop that he's been at. So Brian Windhorst took to the airwaves yesterday to kind of point that out for the LeBron detractors.
If he chooses somewhere else here at the end that he's got no connectivity to, say it's outside Cleveland in Miami, does it complicate it even further that once again, LeBron James, one of the greatest we've ever seen, is going somewhere just to get a ring and not just finally close a chapter of somewhere where he has a connection?
We don't know where he's going. We don't know whether he's chasing a ring. That's number one. Number two, all the teams he's played with, he's delivered a ring. He's delivered a ring to all the places he's played with, and all the places he's played with are going to retire his number. So again, I say to you... How's that for a legacy?
Right.
I mean, what do you want?
Again, it gets complicated this stage, right? We can go back to like Shaquille O'Neal at the end of his days where he was in Cleveland, he's in Boston, he's in Phoenix. You know, he's in different stops and I get it. It doesn't always look the best at the end. So we're close to that with LeBron. It will be interesting. If he tries to go somewhere to win, I think that would be the interesting part. As I mentioned earlier in the program, please like, subscribe to VSiN by the Books podcast. Like Michael Jordan, when he came out of retirement, I was there in D.C. and I covered it, and it was fantastic, but you knew they weren't winning. So there are different expectations depending, I think, on where LeBron goes next year. But I think LeBron still thinks in his mind, he's still LeBron James, can help a team win a championship. What about Kawhi Leonard? What's in his mind? Does he think he can go back home again in Toronto? And they're going to try to rally, and we had JVT on in the last hour. He really likes what Kawhi could bring to the North here in Toronto. Jensen, what do you make of this move here of Kawhi being traded from the Clippers to Toronto?
All in moment for Toronto and JVT, very bullish from what he told us earlier in our program, says they should be the second betting choice in the Eastern Conference. And that is heady praise for a guy that you don't know from a load management standpoint, if he can get to the arena, let alone get his uniform on to be able to play night in and night out. So we'll see what the health looks like. If he misses upwards of 30 games, it's a disaster for Toronto. If he suits up for 60 plus, they got what they were hoping for. So one glorious run in a Raptor uniform, the six on Canada Day gets a nice birthday present themselves with Kawhi Leonard back in the fold.
8-1, third betting choice to win the East. I'm with JVT. I don't think Boston at +260 is, there's no way I'd ever make that bet. But I don't know that I'm as bullish right now at 8-1 at Toronto to win the East. It's going to be interesting to see the way those numbers start to mesh out here as the summer months go on. We continue here in the World Cup, and it's getting more and more exciting, and certainly for Team USA. I believe that we will win against Bosnia-Herzegovina tonight. $7 betting favorites to get that done just to advance. At some point, three-way lines are going to be much smaller here in the United States in regulation. But Jensen, yesterday, three more teams did punch their tickets. What did you make of yesterday as we then foreshadow for tonight?
Nailed it yesterday on a lot of different fronts. If you tailed the three-leg parlay that we advised on the advancement of both, or at least all three of Norway, of France, and of Mexico, that was a +175. If you played that all over the exact score, played it at 7-1 for Norway, 2-1 over Ivory Coast. France looks like a machine. I mean, goodness gracious, they could have had five goals the way it was going. Couple off the posts, a couple unlucky bounces, but they look all the part of a World Cup favorite. Anxious to see what happens here with England at high noon Eastern time, Dave. They have DR Congo in the first match. Belgium, Senegal. If you joined us yesterday, Alex Crook thinks this could be upset city potentially with Senegal. A lot of watchful eyes here from us in the United States awaiting the result of that match. That winner will be the opponent, we hope, of the United States being able to take care of business against Bosnia at 8 o'clock tonight.
And again, not a massive move here. United States number has not moved at all, by the way, still $7 here to advance. England was 11-1 this time yesterday. They're down to 10-1. Against the DR Congo. So just something to monitor there, but it's still massive favorites here for England to move on, survive in advance. Brendan Sorsby will not be playing football in the NFL this year. So it's been quite the saga down there, Lubbock and beyond. And we got lawsuits and we get injunctions and he's going to play college football. He's not going to play college football. That's all right. He'll go to the supplemental draft in the NFL. And the NFL says, no, there's no supplemental draft for you either. You need to get your life and your affairs in order, and then maybe we can talk about it here in the 2027 draft. And Jensen, that feels like exactly what Sorsby is now setting his sights on will be for next April's draft.
This is a scene straight out of Sopranos, Dave, where you walk into the room with all the bosses and you're told, you pipe down, little guy. Just remember who you're dealing with. And that is the feel that I get. This was a quick about face for the Sorsby camp. We'll go ahead and go away quietly, but more importantly, Dave, for the person, take this year an opportunity to grow, continue to refine that image and show the contrition that really ultimately got you into the hot water that produced this saga. So he goes away, continue to work on your craft, young man, and maybe, just maybe, Dave, he bypasses, one of the opportunities here where it would have been too much about him and off the field shenanigans. Now the opportunity to go into what is being billed, Dave, as a quarterback draft for a generation. We'll see what he looks like next year in April in Washington, D.C.
And the bizarre thing is, talent-wise, I mean, we had people telling us he was going to be a first-round pick or worthy of a first-round pick in said supplemental draft. I wonder now, out of sight, out of mind, for as long as it'll be till next April, and you and I will have the discussion. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Brendan Sorsby's back in there. What's he going to look like? That's going to be very interesting. Idle time. Let's hope the young man gets his life back on track because we know he's talented, and the NFL knows that as well. Serena Williams, I enjoyed watching it yesterday, 44 years young, getting back out there, trying to rekindle some of her Wimbledon glory. They put her on center court against Maya Joint, and Maya Joint had not won a match. She'd lost 11 straight on tour. She gets it done yesterday. You could see that it got dicey there in the second. Serena kind of dug into her bag of tricks there and showed some of her will to get this to a third set. And then early in the third, it looked like Serena might be able to really flip the script and go on and walk through. No. Maya Joint stood up, was accounted for, and beat back Serena. So that bid ends. She will play doubles with her sister here, Venus, as they make their doubles return here at the All England Club. But Jensen, I got to say, man, I was impressed watching her at 44 to be able to do that. I don't know if like it would be the equivalent of giving you a fastball today, giving you a baseball and saying, Jensen, get back out there, toe the rubber. Can you get me three outs? I mean, we'll never know, I guess, until you try. But I thought it was a cool spectacle. Would have liked to heard her speak. That would have been nice after she lost yesterday. But what do you make of seeing one of the all-time greats come back and try to apply their craft once again?
Well, this is why Father Time undefeated, right? Maya joint equal to the task was certainly the better and superior player. I think that's what you find is, Dave, every year you step away, it almost adds 5 years what it feels like that you fall behind of what this day and age of athlete is like. So, again, one and done for Serena. Yes, I'm with you. Would have liked to have heard at least a press conference. You were a draw for people. It is a bit unprofessional and not a good look from her, but we'll see what happens on the double side. But congrats to Maya Joint. She moves on in a convincing win over Serena Williams.
Yeah, and I was really confused because I saw the Australian flag from Maya Joint. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, and kind of look, she looks Australian. Well, she's born in Detroit. Like, she was one of the Detroit. She's American and then goes to Australia, and now it's playing under their banner. Right? One of the rare move from America to Australia, I guess. By the way, very quickly, before we get a break, I'd mentioned the heat and it got me yesterday in the golf course. Do you remember ever pitching in conditions where you're like, oh man, this is just too much. It's unbearable for me out here.
Arlington, my rookie year, and then probably Kansas City in August, two of the more sweltering atmospheres, especially on getaway day. No question about it.
I wonder what happened the night before. When we come back, continuing our countdown to Canton, Ohio, and I'm going to put the Bears in the crosshairs, see what they're going to look like this year. That's next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The 4th of July, we are bringing something back that we rarely do here at VSiN. How about this? A multi-year VSiN Pro subscription. 1 week and 1 week only. You can get 2 full years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's accessed through July 2028 at nearly 70% off the regular monthly price. So you're going to get your NFL betting guides, plural, daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, every single betting guide that we do, season previews that we do, and VSiN Pro features we're going to release for the next 2 years, Jensen. So don't wait now. This special 4th of July offer will disappear on July 7th. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now to lock in 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. You mentioned we're going to get some weather across the country here. We don't advocate illegal fireworks, right? Try to keep everything on the up and up. Me and my brother Steve, when we were younger, we did try to do some of that in our backyard, and the police showed up at our house. Our parents, like, we felt like such degenerates that the police had to be called in. That's how many fireworks, Jensen, we were firing off. But you know, it's the 4th of July. You got to do
listen,
it.
Listen, I would never report a fellow American. again, this is We live in the greatest country in the world. We'll leave it at that.
Look at the graphics if you're watching on FanDuel Sports Network and YouTube TV. Fantastic, boys. I like the fireworks that we have. Those were legal fireworks, by the way. Let's get to our countdown to kickoff. It's continuing here for Canton, Ohio. Going to break down every single team along the way. Today, we're going to break down the Bears. And some could say the good luck Bears from a year ago in Ben Johnson. If you remember just a couple years ago, before Ben Johnson got there, right, they lose on the Hail Mary to Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. I was doing that show live with Jonathan Von Tobel. We still can't believe what we saw that day. And then last year, it seemed like a complete flip. Like, you can call it luck box if you want, But Jensen, they pulled victory out of the jaws, literally the bear jaws of defeat. It's seemingly over and over again en route to winning the division. So, yes, you got to have some good fortune, but you also have to be dramatically better from a year ago. And that's what we saw with Ben Johnson and crew last year.
Oh, for sure. And I think, to be honest, this is a team that I know many people will have some of those thoughts of, okay, well, regression has to happen. You cannot get that lucky week in and week out again this year. Something has to give, and perhaps it will. As it stands here, Dave, we look at of course, the trigger man and Caleb Williams. Do we believe that last year and the progression that he made is a prelude of things to come? If so, you're probably bullish on the Bears repeating or at least getting close to the output that they had in just a season ago. As I look at where their offseason to date really ends up being something to take a look at, the big trade, right? DJ Moore goes to the Buffalo Bills for a second rounder in 2026. You look at where their draft was overall. Dylan Thienemann, the safety out of Oregon, was their first round selection at 25, very athletic and versatile, a high upside caliber player, one of the best values that a lot of people that critique the draft really identified and fills a massive hole in the secondary that they had. Logan Jones, a center out of Iowa. You get a hog molly from Iowa, Dave, you're in pretty good shape. They know what they're doing at that time of year and how to take it and really impose their will. Honestly, the offensive continuity and the upside, let's start there. You have the brain trust and what they were able to accomplish in both the run game and the pass game last year. Can that be duplicated? I think they've got a chance to do that with the core offensive skill players that they have. And Dave, from a salary cap standpoint, they're all on rookie deals here for a couple of more years. Can Ben Johnson find a way to get more creative? I don't think they're going to surprise a lot of people. I think that the opponents, especially with the division, understand, you know, what they're capable of. Is this an offense you're scared of, Dave? Running it back with the personnel that they have, are you afraid of what Caleb Williams, another year of growth and familiarity with that receiving core, are you afraid of what they can do week in and week out?
Well, in short answer, I would say no. And I know Bears fans are going to go, what? You're disrespecting the Bears and what they did with 11 wins last year? Look, they got off to a terrible start. And then, of course, they played my Cowboys and they got right and really kind of turned their season around. It felt like early. But I make this point a lot when you look at offensive geniuses, and Ben Johnson is that. Where did he come from? Detroit. What did he do in Detroit? He ran two running backs at you. What does he do in Chicago? He's running Swift and Manungai at you, right? That's really, I know we're going to talk about Caleb Williams all the time, but where they got better dramatically a year ago, this time a year ago, was the offensive line. That's where they got better, people. Yes, Caleb Williams got better too, and that's in conjunction with Ben. And you're always going to give the quarterback kudos when you see a team have success, win a division, and win 11 games. But the reason why they did that was up front. And they were able to play bully ball a lot more in Chicago than have to throw it all over the lot. Because when I look at the weapons, as you mentioned, do they scare me? Roma Dunze, Luther Burden III, these are the kind of primary weapons. And Loveland was a revelation as a rookie last year. Tight end was very good. But that's what we're talking about. Cole Kmet is a backup tight end, running a lot of two tight end stuff there, running the ball a lot. It's not sexy, really. It's not overly complicated what they do. It's effective. And that's the part. Can you stop it? So I think you kind of know who this football team is. Dan Campbell certainly does. He knows exactly what Ben Johnson wants to do. And you know what? At the end of the day, they couldn't stop it at the end when you had to. They were more physical than you. I always talk about this in context with the Hogs and the Redskins back in the day. And I got to know and work with Jeff Bostic, who was the head hog on that team. And he would tell me that they would go up to the line of scrimmage and tell Randy White and Ed Too Tall Jones and all my favorite Cowboys as a kid. He'd go, hey, we called your number again. They love you. They would tell the Cowboys the play and run it right down their throats because it couldn't stop it. That's what Ben Johnson wants to do. He wants to play bully ball against the rest of the NFC North. Can you stop it? That's going to be the question. So it's Caleb Williams. It's the painted nails, all the things that get the attention. But really, the substance, it's not so much about the quarterback. And he made unbelievable plays when he had to make literally jaw-dropping plays that you go, how did he do that? But Jensen, for the most part, it's running the football. It's getting plays out on time. It's feeding tight ends. It's not overly complicated. And then you get that one wow play that everybody ends up talking about. So to me, am I ready to hop on this team to do that same formula at 9.5 wins? I don't know that I am. And I know everybody's going to talk about the Vikings and whether their quarterback play is any good at all in KOC. But when you look at the rest of the division, to book them for 10 wins and play that over, I think there's danger there because I think they're a good football team. I do. I don't think they are as good as they performed. When you absolutely had to make a play, they made every single play in the postseason as well. I just don't know if you can replicate that here in year two for Ben Johnson.
I think it's fair. And that kind of leads me to schedule strength, too. And I know this is part of our handicap heading in, especially as survivor players. Bears right now, according to our VSiN NFL betting guide, have the sixth toughest schedule in the entire NFL. And Dave, the beginning of their schedule, at least the first 3 weeks, presents some unique challenges. On the road in Carolina, underdogs 8-2-1 ATS in the last 11 head-to-head matchups between the Panthers and the Bears. The next week, the home opener against the Vikings, divisional run. Oof. Minnesota is 5-0-1 ATS at Chicago, Dave. And so again, KOC's crew has not only been equal to the task, but also has been one of those spots where it has been tough for Chicago to really be able to get over the hump. Oh, by the way, how about we get the Philadelphia Eagles coming in? The last five games under the total in that head-to-head matchup. So I think what we find here, and I'll ask you this, is it week four against the Jets where you've popped the Bears for survivor? Because after that, it is really tough to identify a scheduling spot that you'd feel confident taking those boys on the north.
Right there with you, man. I look at that schedule, if you're watching on YouTube TV, FanDuel Television as well. Week four against the Jets, you probably better pop them there. Because where else do you want to do it? And by the way, if you're watching this and you're seeing the graphic, look at all the parentheses that you have. That means prime time. Monday night football, Thursday night football, Sunday night football. They're all over the place, right? So you got, four of those, and then you add on Thanksgiving and Christmas as well, and you got a Saturday game against the Bills in the back half of the stretch too. They are going to be in high order, high demand, ratings boost here. That's what the NFL is looking at when you have all of those games. They're going to be standalone games. There's pressure that comes with that too. So to me, I'm looking week four against the Jets at home, but we might be on with everybody else. Do you want to look to zig when they zag? Then maybe you could hold your water till week 11 when they host the Saints. That might be the next spot, Jensen, if you don't want to hop on the bandwagon with everybody in the Jets. But I get it, man. There are not a lot of easy outs for this team. If you made me play it today, no disrespect to my former city, it would have to be an underplay on 9.5 wins this year. Right now, it is juiced to the under, -$1.20. So I think people are picking up what I'm putting down in regards to a win total this year. You are watching By the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Circus football contests are open for business. You don't have to live in Vegas in order to play after your required in-person registration. Winner Circle Proxy is going to handle your weekly submissions so you can make your picks from anywhere in this great United States of ours. Winner Circle Proxy is VSiN's preferred proxy service. One trip to Vegas, that's all you got to do. You can play all season long from anywhere. Schedule your appointment now at winnercircleproxy.com. I know my boy John Chu has already scheduled his for August, getting out there to sign up for Survivor, so we'll be entered in that. Jensen, again, we've got $6 million guaranteed for Millions, $20 million guaranteed for Survivor, $4 million guaranteed for Grandissimo. That's a $100,000 entry, by the way, for the Grandissimo one. Again, we are sticking to our credo, correct? That when we win Millions, then you and I will then be in Grandissimo the following year.
We will. Yes, indeed.
All right. That's all we got to do. Now we got to just go win it. I guess that's the hard part. Let's get to what we're going to see today in the world of baseball, because I know it's not just a big day for us here in the United States, but also to our neighbors to the north. That's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Diamond. Jensen Lewis, happy Canada Day to all of our friends north of the border. Did you pitch on Canada Day ever in Canada?
No, but I did cover a game way back in the mid-2000s that I believe went 19 innings. Did our pregame show at, 12:30, I believe, or early in the afternoon. And the Cleveland Cavaliers had a game that was upcoming in their pre and post. I was going to use the same studio. Well, we had to move our post game to an auxiliary studio because we had been there for 6-7 hours, as the kids would say. Ultimately, the Guardians ended up winning that. Trevor Bauer in relief over our friends to the north.
Wow.
Dave, for those that don't know, it's a big week here for you that celebrate independence. National Day of Canada would be Canada Day here. Back in July 1st of 1867, we all remember when the three separate colonies of the United Canadas, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick reunited into a single dominion within the British Empire. Dave, they would call Canada. That empire will probably rule supreme today when they put on the home Reds. And what a spectacle it is as the Blue Jays will take on the Mets in an afternoon affair. Dave, I like some run suppression just in that one. Under 9 at minus $1.29 on DraftKings. Mets are 25-15-3 to the under as a road team, and I think that stays true with the pitching matchup that we will have north of the border. Freddy Peralta and Braden Fisher, I know. Freddy Peralta has been god-awful here the last month, but trust me, it has been inconsistent offense for the Blue Jays, too. Braden Fisher going to be the opener there, and we'll see what Toronto does after that. But in honor of Canada Day, a little tight affair, cagey, as some may say, between the Mets and the Blue Jays later this afternoon.
Five inning Freddie. Let's see if he can give us a little bit more in the tank. Mets with a big win yesterday to get to just 14 games under 500. Been a disaster. You've got some other things that you're looking at here for maybe October for some teams leading their division. You can still get plus money on some of those teams.
Dave, questions for you. Let's put you on the spot. Would you rather take one of the current division leaders at their current odds, if you will, and looking at where the Rays, who currently lead the American League East, plus $1.60. The White Sox still atop the American League Central at plus $1.50. The Rangers, how about plus $1.90 to win the American League West? Or we're not going to give you the Dodgers as a choice. They are about 10,000 to one as a favorite to win the West, and they will do that. The Braves, almost a 2-to-1 favorite to win the National League East. Or the Brewers, upwards of minus 425. I ask you, sir, buzz in when ready. Which future would you take at a current price for a current division leader?
Man, I mean, I'd hate to buzz in and take the obvious answer. First of all, off-track betting, OTB, off the board there for the Dodgers. Can't bet that. I mean, I don't see how the Brewers, barring Mizorowski, and again, it's a concern about his innings, if he goes down. But, you know, now that Jackson Churio's back in the lineup, we talked about it here a couple days ago, and they did it again yesterday with the Reds. They just grind out at-bats, figure out ways to win. I can't see them losing that division. So that's the safe play, but let's not do the safe play because nobody wants to lay 425 to win 100, right? They want to get a little bit of bang for their buck. They want some plus money. So where is that going to be? Can we go with the Rays? And look, I know our esteemed producer, Joe Friso, a big Yankee guy. I don't want to get him on our bad side here, but Jensen, you've talked about this Rays team, that they are a little bit more frisky, I think, than people think, that there's real power in that lineup, but Caminero really could be kind of moving on potentially as an MVP candidate that we're talking about. Aaron Judge is still not back yet. And you hope that the Yankees get right and get healthy and everything looks good, but they, you know, Cam Schlittler got beaten up yesterday against the Tigers in the boogie down. So all of a sudden at plus $1.60, I don't think anybody in the blind spot's coming. I'm talking about the Blue Jays or the Orioles or the Red Sox. So if it's just handicapping a two-horse race, the Rays at plus $1.60, that might be where I'd hitch my wagon to plus money prices.
Okay. I think that what you'll like too, in kind of in conjunction with our cross-board parlay ideas we've had from earlier in the week, I did put in last night for VSiN Pro subscribers who have followed along. I did put in a France to win the World Cup, Rays to win the World Series at a little over 65-1. And again, we all know that I have that Yankees to win the World Series as the final leg on the New York Knicks winning the NBA title at 287-1. So again, another way to make a correlated play. If France do indeed hoist the World Cup, then we will sit on a raised 65-1 World Series ticket. The way they're going right now, that might be some insane value. Okay, speaking of value, Dave, you have mentioned changing places all day today, and it would be apropos that we mention it one more time here on the Daily Diamond. Now, you're not going to like one of the markets, but you may like another market. And so thus I present you at the halfway point of this calendar year in Major League Baseball as far as games played. I just happened to look at the DraftKings most regular season wins and fewest regular season wins markets last night just for some potential value. Now, riddle me this. As you look at some standings and the overall numbers, let's start with the fewest regular season wins. Your New York Metropolitans, 36-50. They are three off the pace of the Colorado Rockies for fewest wins in Major League Baseball. The Royals get trounced again yesterday. Our ticket is dead for them. We have got to sell, and we will do that and try and make some profit. Royals, 35-51, two behind the Rockies. And then the Detroit Tigers, who just bludgeoned Cam Schlittler in the boogie down last night. They may be catching some fire, but the number being only four behind the Rockies for fewest wins was one that I just kind of wanted to put in there. We'll discuss that in a moment. Of the three, and I know you have to separate your heart here, would you lean into if the Mets do sell at the deadline, which all indications are that they will, would you want a piece of 16-1 for fewest wins? They've already gotten rid of the manager, so, and we already know that Andy Green is going back to the front office, so it's not like it's an audition to stay there and motivate the troops. What do we think about maybe some value on any of those three teams?
It wouldn't bother me if the Mets did have the fewest wins in Major League. So I've given up emotionally. I've checked out on this team a long time ago. But I don't think I'd play it as a bet. And I'll tell you why. Because they're going to have to trade away some of these pieces, whether it's a Freddie Peralta here that we're talking about now is a very expensive rental. What a disaster that's going to turn out to be. But if you trade some of those guys, right, you're not trading Soto, not with that contract. You've got Ewing and Benj already up. You've got young kids. You've got guys like Alvarez that want to prove that he's going to be the catcher of the future, no matter what the rotation looks like. You're going to bring in younger guys. And sometimes when you bring in those younger guys, Jensen, as you well know, you are one of those younger guys. You want to perform. You want to go out there and win and show that you don't need to go get new troops next year. You got them right here. You got rid of the bad apples, so to speak. And I think they could actually, they'll be an aggressive team in the second half, a spunkier team, a younger team that might win a little bit more than this current iteration. And when you still have a Lindor and a Soto in the lineup, Bichette will figure out if they're going to move on from Bo or not. But I think there's still going to be enough talent there. Kansas City would be the one that I'd look at 11-1. Because they have sellable pieces. Certainly the aging guys in the rotation, Jensen. So if you want to move on from Lugos and Wakas of the world, and there's going to be real value for those guys in trade markets here before the deadline, that's a team that I could see that because they don't have enough arms, and I don't know what they would do. You know, obviously, I hope they wouldn't move on from a Cameron or somebody like that, younger guys. But that would be the way that I would see the Royals at 11-1. I think would be a better bet than the Mets at 16-1. And Scooble's interesting at 18-1 if the Tigers trade him. But Jensen, the way they're playing now, and you've made this point here in the Central, it kind of is that division that keeps on giving. I can't imagine they would do that at this juncture.
Yeah, Fangraphs has the Tigers projected for 77 wins. Again, the Rockies at 64, but it was just a year ago, Dave, where I told you at this point, the Toronto Blue Jays for best record at 150-1 feels kind of nice. And boy, they were right there to the thick of the end of it. So we'll see what happens.
Don't I know it. Anthony DeMundo is going to join the program next. Talk all things World Cup when you come back with us right here on VSiN by the Books. We'll be right back.
VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
Today is the day we're all excited, getting ready for USA Soccer taking on Bosnia Herzegovina here to help break it down. He's been kind enough to join us once again here on the Progressive Guest Line, Anthony DeBundo, writer and podcast host at The Ringer. Give him a follow on X at Anthony DeBundo. And great to catch up with you again. And we were just talking a little bit before the break here, Anthony, that you said to me that you're a little bit nervous for the game tonight for Bosnia Herzegovina against the United States. And I guess that shows that's a good thing, right? Because our expectation levels have now risen for Team USA.
Absolutely. I think it's a combination of I'm always going to be nervous for a knockout soccer match at a World Cup involving the Americans. I mean, we just don't get very many of these. The U.S. has played in basically three of them since I started becoming a soccer fan around 2010, and they haven't won any of them. So even though I'm very confident they're going to win tonight, it's still nerve-wracking. It's still one bounce, one deflection. All of a sudden you're in penalties, and then that's incredibly nerve-wracking or something. So, look, I think they're going to win, but it doesn't make me any less nervous.
Well, to that end, Anthony, and from some bettable angles for it, I told Dave earlier, interested your thoughts in it. I would expect the United States will not want Bosnia to be able to kind of settle in and be able to lengthen this game out. If it were me, I would think the attacking third and sending numbers forward, they would kind of want to overwhelm the Bosnian defense and be able to get the early goal. How do you size it up from a tactical standpoint of where we might see the red, white, and blue tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been the story of this World Cup for the Americans, right? They've gotten early goals in both games, and that changes the entire complexion of the match, both games that, you know, all three games, but really the two games that mattered against Australia and against Paraguay. And it forces the, smaller and less talented team who wanted to come out in a more defensive mindset to change their strategy, to not be able to be as defensive. And look, Bosnia is not going to look all that different from Paraguay or Australia in terms of how they approach the match. They are a pretty athletically limited team. They're pretty reliant on set pieces going forward and transition opportunities. They're not going to sustain any kind of possession against the Americans. And so this is the challenge, right? The U.S. is going to set up. They're going to face a team that's very compact and deep in a defensive block. And traditionally and historically, the U.S. has struggled against these kind of teams because they don't really have great midfield passers. They don't really have, you know, that elite playmaker, like when you watch France and you watch Elise and you're like, oh, well, we don't have a guy anywhere near like that level. But one thing that they've done and that Pochettino deserves a lot of credit for is they found different ways to break through these blocks. And I think, you know, tactically, and if you're looking into props and stuff like that, I think the two players are Malik Tillman and Weston McKennie, the two midfielders that get forward so often that end up in the penalty area a lot. I think those two players for shots, especially first half shots, I played a couple props there. It was McKennie, 2+ shots first half. Tillman, 2+ shots first half. Like, I think those are the two key players unlocking this Bosnian defense.
Anthony, I handicap MMA every single week here on the network. And a lot of times in that, you're looking at strength of schedule and you're looking at, well, this guy beat that guy. And sometimes we call it MMA math. Can you do that now? You mentioned Paraguay. Can we do that now after beating Paraguay the way we did and then seeing Paraguay beat Germany? And I know everybody's kind of going, well, is the United States really on that level, on the next level? Can we do that soccer math from what we've seen so far, the way the rest of this World Cup has played out?
You know, it's never that easy with tactics with soccer, because games can change a lot based on one early goal or one bounce or one certain injury that changes the complexion of the match or how a team may change. But, you know, I do think there is something to be said for the fact that Paraguay had a very similar defensive approach against both the U.S. and Germany. And yes, the U.S. had more answers to breaking down a set defense than Germany did. Now, I think part of that is a commentary on the Germans. The German wingers, they only have one. He was poor in this tournament. They don't really have like an ability to fix that problem, and they don't have any width, right? They don't have wingbacks like the U.S. does. They don't have midfield forward runners getting in the penalty area like the U.S. does, which is crazy to say. And we also saw the U.S. play Germany in a friendly right before the World Cup. Both teams played all their starters for an hour, and in that first hour, you really couldn't tell a difference in quality between the two teams. Now, I do think it turns out Germany was a little bit down this year relatively, but I think it is, again, a feather in the cap of Mauricio Pochettino that he has found ways to break down a pretty stingy, pretty set defense. And like, I'm going to make this clear to the listeners. Bosnia is worse than Paraguay by a wide margin. Bosnia is worse than Australia by a decent margin. So keep that in mind when people try to, you know, strike fear in you about how good Bosnia is or something, or talk about their performances. They beat Italy. Oh, there was a red card. There was a red card early in that game. Italy was up 1-0 heading toward a win before the red card doomed them. So, you know, if they get to penalties, Bosnia did win two penalty shootouts to get to the World Cup. That will be, they'll feel confident, but I feel confident that that won't be necessary.
I agree. Confidence is an operative term here. If you're looking at the Three Lions, first match of the day, high noon here, Eastern time, Anthony. And I'm sure they had a watchful eye on the Mexico-Ecuador match late into the evening last night. A lot of the fans we talked to on the England side, not excited at a potential Mexico matchup. Well, guess what? A win against the DR Congo today will set that up. First things first, though. England have yet to really look, I don't want to say competent, but dominant, right? It has been very passive for Harry Kane and company since that first 4-2 victory over Croatia. Size up this matchup from where we might have some bettable angles, and does DR Congo have a way to kind of lengthen this match, maybe even get it into extra time?
Yeah, it's so funny because I really don't think the performances against Ghana and Panama were really that different. I think England had similar issues in both matches, and tactically, this one plays out very similarly to those two. Croatia came out, tried to press England, tried to take it to England, and England completely pummeled them. And I thought really one of the most impressive performances of the entire tournament. But it's a totally different tactical matchup. That Croatia match doesn't really matter in this context. And the thing that broke through for England was set pieces. England scored on a set piece early in the second half against Panama, and they were just really able to smush the game after that. And that's really been the story of Thomas Tuchel and their tactics and their ability to just kind of grind teams down. They conceded basically nothing in those two matches against Ghana and Panama. I know there was the controversial penalty decision, but other than that, they have given up third fewest expected goals in this tournament so far. So can Congo score? I'm not really sure they can. They got a nice goal off of a set piece against Portugal, but I don't think they're going to have much to offer in terms of attack. But I do think they've proven now with their center back quality, they have good wing backs, they can be a very compact defensive team, make life difficult for England and force England to kind of grind them down and play out the string. So an early goal could change everything, but I did bet some under 2.5 here. I think this game ends up being like a 1 or 2-0 England win where it's just kind of a slog. England doesn't really have width. It's a tricky matchup for them to try to break down these kind of teams.
Enjoying our conversation here with Anthony DeBundo, writer and podcast host at The Ringer. Give him a follow on X at Anthony DeBundo. And the match that feels like, and hopefully there's no drama for US of A, and I'm sure England's thinking the same thing against DR Congo. Belgium and Senegal feels like there could be some drama. Tightly lined match here. Belgium small favorites, $1.75. Come back here in Senegal is plus $1.35. What do you see? Because I think a lot of our experts do believe that if there's going to be an upset today, this is the match in where it might happen.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I agree with that. I think this is one of the matches we know the least about in terms of the two teams because, one, Senegal's made a lot of lineup changes. They had Kalidou Koulibaly, their longtime center back in. He was so washed, they benched him after the second game. They pulled him from the lineup. They made some midfield changes. So Senegal is still trying to figure out what its best 11 is. Belgium looked terrible the first two group games and didn't have Jeremy Doku for the second one. Struggled with some pretty bad teams, and this is by far the best team Belgium has faced. If Belgium is able to get the ball into the final third, I think they'll have success against Senegal. I've been unimpressed with Senegal's defense for large stretches of this tournament. But I also think we haven't seen anybody close to the attacking quality that Senegal has against this Belgium defense. I think this Belgium defense is pretty bad. So the market's moved up on the total here at 2.5. I still like some over. And then I think Senegal to advance is probably worth a couple of bucks because at plus 150, it's like, what do we really know about this Belgium team? They haven't played a single team that's close to the level, again, of the Senegal attackers or even midfield. So we could see a team that I think has a little bit of a glass jaw take a big punch here.
Anthony, last 30 seconds with you, brother. Where we are with round of 16 matchups, any outside of, we believe France is a juggernaut with the way that they look. They could have named their number yesterday. Any intrigue for you in the matchups already set for the round of 16?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brazil, Norway is going to be really interesting, and Paraguay, France as well, because, you know, Brazil, Norway should be high scoring, should be back and forth, but we've got real heat problems here. I mean, the three games this weekend, Portugal, Croatia Thursday in Toronto, Philly for Paraguay and France, and then Brazil, Norway at MetLife on Sunday, all three games could be 100 degrees. And at that point, you do really start to see significant impacts on the quality of the play, the intensity of the play. It's just really hard to play soccer in that kind of heat. So I think all three matches will be heavily impacted by the weather.
Or golf. Tough to play golf in those temperatures too, Anthony.
Yes.
Great stuff. As always, give him a follow. Check him out as a host on The Ringer. We are back. A little Stock Up, Stock Down is next. Beeson by the Books.